The story continues. I'm Joseph. This is Input English. Many times I have said that stories are magical for language learning. Studies and experience with story learning tell us that stories are a great resource for us, the language learners. Ideally, the language of that story being told would be slightly higher than our level of listening comprehension or reading ability, so it should challenge us a little bit. If the story is too difficult, it creates frustration. If it's too easy, it can contribute to boredom. We want to be in that sweet spot where the content is just a little higher than our listening comprehension, so that we are challenged. As we listen to stories or read stories, our mind engages with the story and it brings the language along with us. What I find is that when I am listening to or reading a story in one of my target languages, the language sort of disappears. I'm so focused on the story that I forget that I'm reading it in a language that I'm trying to learn. Today, our story continues. In a recent episode, I reviewed the information that we have about Gil and Giselle. It had been a long time since I told the story of Gil and Giselle, so I did a recap. If you missed that video, I will link it in the description below. Often we try to make stories freestanding, but sometimes with complex stories, it's very difficult to do that. This is one of those stories. It is a serialized story that has been told over many videos, and you can find the entire playlist, Stories About the Mysterious Ben Harper. So let's join Gil and Giselle. They have returned from their honeymoon. They were married in St. David's Church in Exeter, and then they traveled to Paris. They chose Paris at the request of Giselle. She wanted to have her honeymoon in Paris. They had a lovely time. At one point, Giselle explained her joy when she spoke with her new husband, Gil. She said, "You know, I have to pinch myself." When Giselle said that, what she meant was that she felt like she was dreaming. And by pinching herself, she could wake herself up and make certain that it was not just a dream. Pinch myself is an expression that dates back to the 19th century. It's used today. If something is really good, really fine, and one is trying to express how wonderful it is, they may say, "I need to pinch myself." When Gil and Giselle returned to Exeter, they returned to Giselle's house. This was a time in England that property rights of women were changing. A new law in 1870 gave women considerable property rights over their possessions, including their home, that they may have inherited from their deceased husband. Those property rights were further codified in 1882. So when Gil and Giselle returned to Exeter, Giselle owned her own home. Gil and Giselle talked a lot about where they would live and how they would build their new life together. They have agreed that they would like to stay in Exeter, and Gil had proposed that perhaps they should buy a home that is new to the both of them. After all, this home that Giselle owns is the one that she occupied with her late husband, who was killed in army service overseas. Gil assumed that she might have some strong memories that would interfere with her building a new life with him. Giselle didn't see it that way. She explained to Gil that she and her late husband had bought that house with the expectation that they would build a family. They put a lot of thought into selecting that house, knowing that they would have children. They were creating a good environment for children to grow up. Giselle pointed out that when her husband died, she thought that this house had been bought for nothing. She didn't expect to remarry. She didn't expect to have any children. And this created a lot of sadness. This was sadness on top of her grief from the loss of her husband. It was a double dose of sadness. So now that Giselle and Gil are together, they are happily married, Giselle is assuming that they will have children and that this house would be ideal for raising those children. She also saw this as an opportunity to erase a lot of her feelings of loss because she had assumed that she would never have children and that having this house was for nothing. Gil understood those arguments. He reassured her that they should stay in that house and that he would very much like to have children with her and raise them in that house. Giselle assumed that now she has married a new husband, that Gil, her new husband, would get control of her property. Gil had actually talked to an attorney about this. He wanted to know the rules. After all, Gil was from the United States, so he didn't have a good understanding of the laws of England, at least not the fine points of property ownership. The barrister, that is the attorney, had explained in detail how this should work. Gil decided that Giselle should retain her ownership of this house, and he would not take any steps to exert control over this property. The house would remain hers. This is an example of Gil taking the long view. He assumed that there would be a time in the future when this would be important to Giselle for her security and for the security of the family. One of the rooms in the house was designated as Gil's study. Sometimes Gil would use his study for reading. Other times he would sit with Giselle in the sitting room, the parlor. One day, Gil was in his study. He had been reading, and he put his book down. He was just thinking about his situation, his new wife, plans to have a family, plans to build a new life in Exeter. But hanging over those plans was his knowledge of this amulet that he wore, the amulet that no one could see except him. The amulet that gave him considerable powers and considerable frustration. As we learned in other episodes, the amulet prevents aging. It bestows upon him telekinesis, that is, he can move objects with his mind. It gives him premonitions. He has some degree of clairvoyance about things that will happen in the future, and it creates the dream portal, which allows him to travel back in time, and events that occur during his trips into the dream portal actually modify the timeline. The future is different after he wakes up having been in the dream portal. This has been a lot for Gil to try to understand. His greatest frustration related to the amulet is that he couldn't control those powers by his will. These powers bestowed upon him by the amulet are amazing, but he cannot use those powers volitionally. This was what Gill was thinking about in his study. He had put his book down, and in a moment of despair, he covered both of his eyes. He covered his eyes with the palms of his hand, cupping his palms so as to occlude all the light from his eyes. This is something he had done since childhood, when the world around him seemed too much. He did this to shut off some of the stimulation. He would just cover his eyes and cover all the light entering his eyes. He would open his eyes with his hands cupped over them and note that it appeared to be pitch black. He felt that that gave him some refuge from the situation around him. When it was too much, Gill would just cover his eyes and then open them in his cupped hands, and in so doing, he could relax. Some of the stimulation had been reduced. This day that I am telling you about, he did just that in his study. He had put his book down. He had a lot of despair about his relationship with the amulet, his lack of control, and his knowledge that he would outlive his new wife. After all, Gill had already buried his first wife. Gill appears to be in his early 30s, but in reality, he is in his late 60s. He is an old man by the standards of late 19th century England. But he didn't appear to be old. He appeared to be young, certainly no older than his early 30s. In this moment of despair, he covered his eyes, relaxed, and then said in a low voice, "It is such a gift and such a burden." Unbeknownst to Gill, Giselle had quietly entered the room. She saw him with his eyes covered. She didn't make a sound. So when he uncovered his eyes and looked up, there was Giselle. He had no idea how long she had been there. He greeted her, and her greeting in return was normal, very warm. He relaxed, assuming that she had not heard what he had said. Giselle beckoned Gill to join her in the sitting room. He gladly accepted that invitation, and the two of them went into the parlor. Gill brought his book, assuming that he would continue reading, and he settled into the comfortable chair. Giselle sat on the couch next to him. It was at that point that Giselle said, "What is such a burden?" Gill was alarmed. She had heard what he had said. She had just quoted it back to him, but she only quoted the end of it, so he wasn't certain how much of it she had heard. Had she heard the whole exclamation, "It is such a gift and such a burden"? Had she heard it all? Or had she just picked up on the last word or two? So he asked her, "What do you mean?" She answered honestly. She said that when she walked into the room, he was sitting with his eyes covered, and he had said, "It is such a gift, but such a burden." She quoted the entire exclamation that he had made in a moment of despair. This was an old problem for Gill. Intrinsically, he always wanted to be honest, but there were things about him he couldn't share with other people. There were things about himself, in particular the amulet and its powers, that he chose to not share with his first wife, his late wife. This was the situation he found himself in. He really wanted to be honest with Giselle, but he was not in a position to explain in detail the amulet, its powers, and the implications for their future in the coming decades. They would have time together, but with Gil having this amulet, it was nearly certain that Gil would outlive his new wife. That was the root of this despair. He was so happy with Giselle. He was so happy that they would be building a family together and living in this house. But he knew that the time would be limited. And at some point, he would be faced with being alone again. So understanding that, we can say that Gil's answer to Giselle was truthful, but incomplete. He did not talk about the amulet. He did not talk about these magical powers it gave him. And he did not talk about the near certainty that he would outlive her. What he said was that they had each had a previous marriage. They had each sustained tremendous personal loss. They had weathered a great deal of grief. And now they found each other and were happy beyond expectations. When he talked to Giselle about what he had said, he simply referred to their past, their loss, their grief, and now their great happiness. He explained that he had called it a burden to carry these vestiges of grief while building a new life. Giselle understood what he said and accepted it at face value. That explanation was good enough for her. She agreed. And then she picked up her book and started to read. It was a natural break in the conversation, and we could interpret that Giselle's commencing to read her book was her own version of turning off old negative thoughts, diverting her attention away from old memories. She was now comfortable in her parlor with her new husband, and she was determined to read her book and enjoy it. Gil took her lead and commenced to read himself. They sat in silence for some time. After a while, the clock on the mantelpiece struck the hour. It was in the late morning. It struck 11. When Gil heard the time strike, he suspected that the clock was slow. He reached into his vest pocket and looked at his pocket watch. His pocket watch was much more precise than the mantel clock. Gil had learned that the pocket watch was typically within 1 minute a day, but the mantel clock could lose or gain many minutes per day. So, since they had returned from their honeymoon, Gil had made it his business to keep the mantel clock correctly adjusted. He adjusted it nearly every day. But on this day, he had not yet adjusted it. He looked at his watch, he looked at the clock, and he noted that the clock was 7 minutes behind schedule. The clock on the mantel was 7 minutes slow. He put his pocket watch back into the vest pocket and resumed reading. He had decided that he would adjust that clock after a while. There was no reason to do it right now. He continued reading. Unfortunately, he found that his knowledge that that clock was 7 minutes slow bothered him. He had trouble concentrating on the book he was reading because of this intrusive thought that the clock was not accurate. He did not want to get up, walk across the room, open the front of the clock, and move the hand 7 minutes. He didn't feel like doing that, but this intrusive thought that the clock was behind by 7 minutes made it impossible for him to concentrate on his reading. It made it impossible for him to enjoy his reading. The clock was situated just to the left of his gaze. That is, he could look at the clock without moving his head very much at all. He could just glance at it without really making any significant movement. He found himself glancing at the clock, that is, looking up from his book and glancing at the clock, and then trying to get back to his reading. He was getting a little upset and a little obsessed. All the while this was occurring, Giselle was simply reading her book. She was not aware of this little drama playing out in Gil's mind. At one point, Gil was overcome. He glanced at the clock and then stared at it. He noted his irritation that that clock was 7 minutes slow. As he stared at the clock, the hand started to move. The minute hand moved 7 minutes around the dial and stopped at the correct time, the time that was correct according to Gil's pocket watch. When this happened, it did not surprise Gil. This sort of thing had happened before, and he was simply irritated that he could not do it at will. So when the minute hand of the clock reset to the correct time without him touching it, Gil was satisfied and proceeded to settle back into reading. The stress that he had felt had been alleviated. There was no more stress. The clock on the mantelpiece was correct, unbeknownst to Gil. While this little drama was playing out and the minute hand was moving, Giselle had glanced up from her book. For some reason, she glanced upon her husband and noted that his gaze was fixed on the clock. When the minute hand moved 7 minutes to the new time, it took all her strength to not gasp. She couldn't believe what she was seeing. She understood that Gil was staring at the clock and that the clock had responded to his stare by moving its minute hand. He had reset the clock from across the room without touching it. Giselle was not an expert on the inner workings of clocks, but she knew from her experience in life that there were no clocks that could be adjusted without touching them. Giselle said nothing. In the next episode, we will learn more about how Giselle and Gil deal with this interesting problem. She had seen something that she had trouble interpreting. She had seen a side of Gil that was completely unexpected, but she had said nothing. We will learn more about this and other things that Giselle discovered about her new husband in upcoming episodes. I invite comments below, and if you like videos like this, be sure to click on this one next. See you soon.